From experimental history. You say potato, I say leprosy. This is the quarterly links and updates post, a collection of things I've been reading and doing for the past few months. As late as 1813, some parts of the European medical establishment believed that potatoes cause leprosy. Don't even get them started on scrofula. Potato historian Solomon Redcliffe suggests that people were skeptical because potatoes look kinda weird. They grow in the ground, and you plant them as tubers rather than seeds, which are all extremely suspicious things for a food to do. You may remember the Spurious Correlations website, which dredges up random datasets and finds correlations between them. For instance, Lululemon's stock price and the popularity of the first name Stevie. Now thanks to AI, each one of those correlations can be instantly turned into a full academic paper like Lululemonade, a statistical study of the Stevie Nye's market. Sadly, this technology makes many academic departments completely redundant. Via, there's a good chance that 2025 will have the fewest murders ever recorded in the US. We only have reliable data going back to 1960. I just added a new entry to my list of all-time great blog posts. Ask not why would you work in biology, but rather, why wouldn't you? Bio of an excerpt. Yes, biologia is very interesting. Yes, biologia is very hard to do well. Yet it remains the only field that could do something of the utmost importance. Prevent a urinary catheter from being shunted inside you in the upcoming future. Before World War I, the US government had basically no cryptographic capacity. So when the war broke out and suddenly they needed people to do code breaking, where did they turn? To the Riverbank Institute, which had been set up by Colonel George Fabian to decode the most important cipher of all, the one that supposedly proved the works of Shakespeare were written by Francis Bacon. Elizabeth and William Friedman, the couple who broke the cipher while working at Riverside, went on to become the first cryptologists at the precursor to the National Security Agency. 1 of the wildest blog posts I've read this year is about an American guy going to fight in the Ukraine war. Honestly, it sounds like a huge bummer. You squat in a trench and pretend to shoot at Russians and hope to not be killed by a drone. When I saw this post called How Pen Caps Work, I was like, what do you mean? Pen caps work by caps for pens. Putting the cap on and taking it off causes a tiny amount of suction that draws the ink into the nib. Who was one of the winners of my 2025 blog post competition has a great series on why neuroscientists still can't simulate a worm. I told my mom that this is what my job feels like. Each animal has a different kind of radio in its head and her body, and neuroscientists are trying to figure out things about them. Apparently not. For fountain pens anyway, pen caps work through vacuum power. Some neuroscientists want to fix radios, some want to build better radios. Others, like me, are just trying to understand them. To which Lai's mom responded, other nematode fun facts from Lai's piece. They use static electricity to teleport themselves onto bumblebees as a way of getting around, and nematodes survive the space shuttle Columbia explosion. More great work from a 2025 blog extravaganza honoree. Has a terrific article in Works in Progress. Why isn't AI replacing radiologists? Radiology was supposed to be the first medical specialty to be rendered obsolete by AI. Instead, radiology jobs are more numerous and salaries are higher than ever. The polarization dashboard is a useful sanity check against current events. Whenever something big happens in politics, people are like our very souls have permanently changed when in fact people almost always have the same opinions that they did yesterday. Here's the change in support for murdering members of the opposite political party over time. Currently, 2% of Democrats and Republicans support it. HTC also. You're probably wrong about how things have changed. Some beginner researchers successfully replicated my things could be better paper without any expert help. I'm really proud of this. Who ran the workshop writes, I did not help replicate the study because the group replicating measures of anchoring and estimation tasks the other study being replicated needed help understanding the language the paper was written in. In contrast, the group replicating things could be better started their own replication within 15 minutes of being handed the paper and did not have any follow-up questions for me before they began the replication. 2 years ago, a Harvard Business School professor named Francesca Gino was fired for faking her data. I wrote about the debacle here. She sued the bloggers who outed her, but that lawsuit was thrown out. She also sued Harvard, claiming discrimination. Now Harvard is suing Gino back. Alleging that when Gino submitted data to prove that her original data wasn't fake, the new data was fake too. And his friends ask, what if the NIH had been 40% smaller? I appreciate how circumspect the authors are, but the short answer seems to be, we would be significantly worse off, because many important medicines rely on research that would not have happened under a smaller budget. This is further evidence of just how important it is to invest in science. Even when we do it in a totally boneheaded way, it somehow still pays off. Recently, the Financial Times set the internet alight with these graphs. Reanalyze the data and claims the changes in conscientiousness are minimal, if they exist at all. I'm inclined to trust Ferguson's account on this one. It's super weird to see such huge changes in such small amounts of time on basically any psychological variables. Speaking of personality, Clear Thinking now has one mega personality test that will give you all your results from a bunch of different tests at once. I previously cited their work showing that supposedly scientific personality tests do not obviously outperform the bullshit ones, which continues to boggle people's minds whenever I bring it up. One of the most famous psychology experiments of all time is Festinger and Carl Smith 1959, the classic demonstration of cognitive dissonance. The psychologist Matty Hino points out, though, that the main results literally don't add up. In the table below, the circled means are impossible given the reported sample size. There's no way to get an average of 3.08, for instance, if you have 20 people giving ratings on a 0-10 scale. Anyway, when a bunch of labs tried to replicate another classic demonstration of cognitive dissonance, they found no effect. 3 and a new paper claims that When Prophecy Fails, a landmark book that documented the effects of cognitive dissonance in a doomsday cult, may have been greatly embellished or deliberately orchestrated by the authors. 4 None of this means that cognitive dissonance doesn't or can't exist, but it does make me feel a whole lot of a dissonance. I used to be one of those people who was like, well, cognitive dissonance has been replicated in hundreds of studies, but it's not like I ever actually read those studies. It just kind of seems like, come on, it's cognitive dissonance. Everybody knows cognitive dissonance. According to this study, losing a Michelin star improves TripAdvisor ratings. This is probably because getting a star invites harsher judgment. It's good, but is it Michelin good? The perfect restaurant is one that raises your expectations high enough to get you to come in, but leaves your expectations low enough that you can still be wowed. This is a hard target to hit. I've only ever seen two restaurants that have a 4.9 on Google after receiving thousands of ratings. Both of them are Thai restaurants that are nice but not fancy and cool but not trendy. You go expecting good Thai food and you get fantastic Thai food and everybody goes.